on screen in front of 600 people who have just gone through a complete and thorough briefing on the status of benchmark reform. And the consensus was there's a lot more to do, of course. A lot of each of the individual products need a lot more education. We need a lot more trading. So I'm sure you and I have spoken several times about this. You've been generous with your time in terms of your efforts to educate the market. So I'm going to turn it over to you. And I have a few questions that I'd like to hear from you on. And so we'll, after your remarks, we'll go into a Q&A session.
Okay, that sounds good. Thanks very much, Scott.
It all works. So over to you, Guy. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Fraser, for the opportunity to speak at your AGM. Some of it, what I'm about to say, you may have just heard in the previous session, although I did catch certainly the last half of that. But anyway, it's been almost 2 years since Andrew Bailey announced that the FCA is no longer going to use its powers to sustain LIBOR beyond 2021. But since that time, preparing for the end of LIBOR has been a key challenge for the global finance industry. What I'd like to do now is just give a brief update on the progress with benchmark reform internationally and then highlight some particular issues in the Asia Pacific region. There's now widespread recognition, at least I'm pretty sure as hell hope so, that LIBOR is going to come to an end. The fundamental problem is that there are not enough transactions in the short-term interbank market to underpin LIBOR. Banks that make the submissions that are used to calculate these benchmarks are uncomfortable about continuing to do so, and as they have to rely mainly on their expert judgment rather than actual transactions. To prevent LIBOR from abruptly ceasing to exist, the FCA received assurances from the current banks on the LIBOR panel they'll continue to submit until the end of 2021. But beyond that point, there is no guarantee that LIBOR will survive. The FCA will not compel banks to provide submissions, and the panel banks may choose to stop. Financial regulators around the world expect institutions using LIBOR to be ready to transition to more robust benchmarks. If they haven't done so already, users need to identify their exposures to LIBOR now and be working now on transiting to alternative rates. We know that a sizable number of financial contracts referencing LIBOR extend beyond 2021, some of them extending almost 100 years beyond 2021, including derivatives, bonds, and loans. So the transition is going to involve a substantial amount of work, both to amend contracts and probably more particularly update systems. The FSB has been monitoring progress on the transition and on ensuring that contracts referencing LIBOR include robust fallback positions. And Randy Quarles, the chair of the FSB, spoke on this issue sometime in the previous 12 hours or so in Washington. The transition from LIBOR to alternative risk-free rates is accelerating internationally. RFRs have now been identified for all the LIBOR currencies by the national working groups, which comprise both the private sector and the regulators. The rates chosen are overnight RFRs, either measured from transactions in interbank unsecured lending markets or in repo markets. It's been now a year since the Fed started publishing SOFR, and since the Bank of England implemented reforms to SONIA. Recently, the ECB announced that it will launch ESTA at the start of October. These rates are more robust than LIBOR since they're anchored in active, liquid, underlying markets in stark contrast to LIBOR. Usage of RFR in derivative markets is increasing. Futures and cleared swaps referencing SOFR have started trading, as you just heard in the previous session, which is ahead of the schedule set by the Alternative Reference Rate Committee, which is the main US group driving the LIBOR transition. There's been even more progress on sterling, where trading in cleared OTC derivatives referencing SONIA is now broadly equivalent to that of sterling LIBOR. The RFRs are also being adopted in some cash products. In bond markets in particular, a wide range of institutions have issued floating rate bonds referencing the RFRs. Since July last year, there have been quite a few deals referencing SOFR. The transition again is further advanced for sterling, where SONIA has been used in just over half of the deals this year. And that's actually included two Australian banks which have issued sterling floating rate bonds referencing SONIA. The rapid adoption of SONIA in the bond market demonstrates that RFRs can be used in cash products that previously only referenced LIBOR. Some market participants argue that overnight RFRs may not be the most appropriate benchmark to use in all cases. In particular, lenders and borrowers in the syndicated loan market have raised concerns about using the overnight RFRs in place of LIBOR. That's not surprising, since LIBOR was originally set up to cater for exactly that market. It was the first transaction. Participants in this market want to know the interest payments on loans in advance. This is possible with the forward-looking rate such as LIBOR, which is set at the beginning of the interest rate period, but it is not possible when compounding an overnight RFR, which can only be calculated at the end of the period. In response to this, some of the national working groups have been considering how to develop term RFRs. These forward-looking rates could potentially be constructed from derivatives referencing the overnight RFRs. However, for such term rates to be considered robust, there would need to be sufficient liquidity and transparency in the underlying derivatives market. That's an important point to emphasize. We are not going to move away from one reference rate, which doesn't have enough transactions and liquidity, to another one, which doesn't. The Alternative Reference Rates Committee is aiming for a term rate based on SOFR derivatives to be developed by end 2021, once there is sufficient liquidity to produce a robust rate. Again, the currency most developed, progress on developing a term RFR is sterling, but the recent consultation run by the UK Working Group found that there would need to be a step change in activity in derivatives markets for a term SONIA rate to be sufficiently robust. At the other end of the spectrum, the Swiss Working Group has found that a term RFR is just not going to be feasible given the low level of activity in derivatives referencing the Swiss franc rate. While the development of term RFRs is desirable, it's not yet clear that they will be sufficiently robust. And in that context, we encourage market participants preparing for that LIBOR transition to work on using overnight RFRs than waiting for the development of term RFRs. Furthermore, the FSB has made it clear that derivatives markets will largely need to transition to the overnight RFRs to ensure financial stability. Derivatives represent the largest exposure to LIBOR, and only transitioning to the overnight RFRs can address the core weakness of LIBOR, which again is the absence of a deep and liquid market to underpin the benchmark. Another key focus over the past year has been on developing more robust fallback provisions in contract referencing LIBOR. This would reduce the risk of financial instability if these benchmarks were to abruptly cease. It is generally agreed that the existing fallback provisions would be cumbersome to apply and could generate significant market disruption. To address this risk, the FSB encouraged ISDA to work with market participants to develop a more suitable fallback methodology. The key challenge has been to agree on a standard methodology for constructing fallbacks for LIBORs using the overnight risk-free rates. ISDA conducted a consultation on some key technical issues regarding the methodology second half of last year and found strong support for using as the fallback the compounded RFR with an adjustment for the historical difference between the RFR and LIBOR. But there are several further key steps that need to be completed before the fallbacks will be ready for adoption. ISDA is working on the details of how exactly to calculate that historical spread, and most obviously, what historical period to use to calculate that spread. The FSB has asked ISDA to consult on including an additional fallback trigger that would take effect if the FCA found that LIBOR was no longer representative of the underlying market. This would be a pre-cessation trigger just for LIBOR. This would be in addition to ISDA's existing triggers, which deal with scenarios where a benchmark has just ceased. ISDA will also conduct consultations for additional benchmarks that were not covered in the original consultation, including in particular US dollar LIBOR. Once ISDA has finished the fallback provisions, regulators expect users of LIBOR to adopt them. Thanks to ISDA's hard work, this should be relatively straightforward for derivative markets. But it will be important for users to adopt equivalent fallbacks for cash products wherever possible. So to support this, the Alternative Reference Rate Committee has run a series of consultations to establish consistent, robust fallbacks for different cash products referencing US dollar LIBOR. LIBOR is deeply embedded in the plumbing of the financial system, so replacing it with overnight RFRs has significant and widespread implications beyond financial markets. For instance, the LIBOR transition raises a number of accounting, tax, and regulatory issues. The LIBOR transition has the potential to disrupt the accounting treatment of products referencing LIBOR, particularly when they're used for hedging. And this could generate volatility in the reported earnings of companies that is unrelated to their underlying financial performance. It could also have significant tax implications. So in response to those sort of issues, the International Accounting Standards Board is working on amending the global accounting standards to provide relief for existing hedges from the uncertainty generated by the LIBOR transition. The treatment of legacy OTC derivatives referencing LIBOR is also under consideration. These contracts will need to be amended to adopt more robust fallback provisions, which could affect their status under the G20's OTC derivatives reforms. Regulators are making progress on this. For instance, the Basel Committee and IOSCO recently announced that there would be relief from margin requirements where legacy derivatives are amended to address benchmark reforms. Let me turn to the Asia Pacific region, where considerable work is being undertaken to strengthen local benchmarks and prepare for the LIBOR transition. Australia, Hong Kong, Japan, and Singapore are all on the FSB's steering group on this issue. And we are also working within regional forums to highlight benchmark reform issues. In Australia, we have taken a multiple rate approach. The credit-based benchmark BBSW has been strengthened and coexists alongside the cash rate, which is the risk-free rate for Australia. This has been possible since both BBSW and the cash rate are supported by underlying markets with enough transactions to calculate robust benchmarks. So BBSW can continue to exist even after LIBOR ends. It's an important point to get across. For many financial products, it will still make sense to reference a credit-based benchmark like BBSW. But as markets transition from referencing LIBOR to RFRs, there may be some corresponding migration away from BBSW towards the cash rate. This will depend on how international markets for products such as cross-currency swaps end up transiting away from LIBOR. Good progress is being made on developing new market conventions for trading cross-currency basis swaps, referencing risk-free rates or combinations of risk-free rates and credit-based rates. Give market participants the choice. Regulators in the region are also seeking to strengthen the contractual fallbacks for the benchmark at the same time as LIBOR. Australian and Japanese benchmarks were included in ISDA's consultation last year, and the Hong Kong and Singapore benchmarks are expected to be included in the next round of consultation by ISDA. Once ISDA finalises these fallbacks, we strongly encourage all users of benchmarks in the region to adopt them. One issue that has been generating quite a bit of angst in this region is the impact of the European Union's benchmarks regulation. Under that, European supervised entities, including banks and CCPs, can only use benchmarks that are registered in the EU. To achieve this status, benchmarks administered outside the EU would need to be in a jurisdiction which the EU regarded as being equivalent. The EU had set a deadline of 1 January 2020, but has recently announced a two-year extension. This is a welcome development and provides administrators in the region with additional time to comply with the requirements. In addition, and more at least as importantly, the EU has recently issued draft decisions recognising the Australian and Singaporean regulatory regimes as equivalent to the European regime. This means that benchmarks such as BBSW and SOR can continue to be used in the European Union after the 1st of January 2022. So let me just finish by reiterating three main points I'd like you to take away from this. First of all, the end of LIBOR is approaching. Market participants should continue preparing for this by transitioning to alternative risk-free rates. Secondly, it is prudent for users of all benchmarks to have robust fallback provisions in their contracts, not just those referencing LIBOR. So regardless of which benchmark rate you use, you should have robust fallback provisions. ISDA's work on fallbacks is progressing well, and we encourage all users of interest rate benchmarks to adopt ISDA's fallbacks once they are finalised. Finally, most jurisdictions in the Asia Pacific region have chosen to strengthen their credit-based benchmarks. This includes Australia, where our assessment is the BBSW remains a robust benchmark. Credit-based benchmarks can coexist along risk-free rates when they are supported by liquid underlying markets. Users can then choose the benchmark that is most appropriate for their circumstance. Let me finish there and happy to take some questions from you, Scott, and from others.
Terrific, thank you very much. You mentioned some of the work that ISDA is doing, and we responded to the FSB's consultation, providing kind of a timeline and commitment on the issues that you've identified. And we'll be posting a letter that we have sent back to the FSB OSSG, Andrew Bailey and John Williams at the New York Fed, kind of outlining what we intend to do. We'll post that on our website today, but the commitments are as follows. We will consult on Canadian dollar as well as Hong Kong and Singapore. We will continue to do the pre-cessation triggers consultation. Following that, we'll continue to work to develop a vendor solution to publish the fallback rate, and then move forward with an additional consultation on the parameters of the compounded and arrears historic mean median that you referenced, that is the foundation of the first consultation that we did. So we'll have that prepared with all the great details that are necessary to make that operable. Later in the year, we'll transition to develop the new interest rate definitions and then eventually into the protocol. All of that is to be completed this year. So we have expressed that to the FSB OSSG, that timeline, and that's embodied in our letter going forward. And as you mentioned in there, Governor Quarles did have that event in Washington yesterday, and the response, the takeaway out of that was the official sector needs to be more muscular in supporting industry transition. What does muscular mean to you?
I don't know, and I can't really speak for other regulators, but I can tell you what it means for us in our own jurisdiction. So for new securities referencing BBS, so it comes to the fallback provision. So we would like products which reference BBSW to have the fallback provisions consistent with the ones you're developing at ISDA. So we, the RBA, determine which securities are repo eligible for us. And so we will impose as a requirement that before securities can be eligible in our market operations going forward, new securities, that they have those fallback provisions. So that's one avenue which at least is available in our jurisdiction where we can be more muscular, to use Randy's words. Rather than just encourage, we can actually ensure some degree of traction. So in our market, that would affect FRNs issued by banks, the securitizations, as well as the paper issued by our state governments.
So you mentioned the term structure, and this is an interesting debate that we've been having. Term structures provide people certainty going forward. It's comfortable, it's what they know, but as you point out, we're not here to recreate LIBOR, right? We want a good, robust transaction base. However, it could facilitate and enable the transition to risk-free rates if people have term structures. Chicken or the egg problem, how do you think about this?
I think it is a chicken and the egg problem. as you said, that's very much what it is. One thing I think which may overcome that is actually just the sheer market pressure, right? If there's enough people, I think some of the panelists in the previous session alluded to this, if there's enough market demand for that, then I think it will potentially generate enough trading. And if enough people realize, if that's really what they need for their own purposes, then I think that will probably come. It's not clear to me in some of this discussion whether it's more of a systems issue or actually an underlying desire for a term rate. Some of the discussions we've had, some of it seems to be, well, our systems are set up, particularly if I'm managing a fixed income fund, for instance, our systems are set up to pay people out using forward-looking rates. And so we can't wait until we're compounding the backward-looking one because our systems just aren't set up that way. So it's never quite clear. But at the same time, there is often an underlying rationale which makes it sensible to do it that way. So we're never quite sure whether it's a systems issue or actually an inherent desire for it. But that said, I do think either way, we are getting to the point where there's going to be sufficient demand for it that to some extent I think that is going to be enough to get over that chicken and egg problem. Because to some extent, if you go back a bit over 18 months now, there was even, well, are we going to get enough trading even in SOFA or in SONIA related products? And the answer 12, 18 months later is, turns out to be, yes, we are. And I do think we could see a similar development with the term rates as well.
Do you think there will be a term structure for the RBA cash rate?
So we know that there's demand for investors, as I said, for term risk-free rates. We are supportive of efforts by the private sector to develop such term rates. We don't have a particular comparative advantage in generating such rates. And it could be possible to generate a rate, as we're just discussing, using the OIS market or the repo market. But again, there would need to be significant efforts to develop the appropriate market infrastructure and practices before these could be considered robust benchmarks. Now, those discussions are happening in our market, including with some of the major infrastructure providers. And so there is quite plausible that will succeed. But, and this is something I said in the speech, we encourage, you can't just sit there and wait in the hope that transpires, because it may not get there in time. And in the meantime, we think you should consider using the overnight cash rate rather than waiting for the development of a term rate. So by all means, work towards developing a term rate, but we don't want to get to the point where that's not ready, but we need it. So you need to have thought, at the very least, thought about how you would transition to using the overnight rate.
Terrific, thank you. So ISDA is going to be consulting on pre-cessation triggers. Andrew Bailey, when he made his remarks and was a shot heard around the world, saying that post-2021 that we will not have LIBOR potentially. That really served as a catalyst in terms of people thinking about their strategy. If we keep LIBOR around longer and we're waiting for non-representative benchmarks, This could impact the uptake of universal protocols. How do we overcome that as we go forward? It's going to take much more muscular support from the official sector, I think.
Yeah, although I think Andrew's been pretty muscular on that front. I mean, I think he's made it pretty clear where the FCA stands on this, and we would very much share the same view as Andrew on that. I can't speak for everyone on that point, but put it this way, I think if you read what Andrew said, the threshold for anything existing beyond that date, in his view, is pretty damn high. So as I said, I'm not sure that he can be a hell of a lot more muscular than he has been, and to some extent, the request for that pre-cessation trigger is very much reflects that view. If you didn't need it, the fact that we feel that needs to be explicitly laid out is, to some extent, exerting some of those muscles.
Yeah. Well, we'll be publishing our new consultations this month, and we'll be looking forward to the results of that consultation and feeding that back to the official sector as we progress the development of risk-free rate fallbacks. I think that's all we have in store for you today. Thank you very much for broadcasting in. We greatly appreciate your time and effort contribute to this very important debate. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Scott.